All right, Rex, how you doing? So what we're on? So what the? I saw you the other night with the group with Marcello. What else are you working on?
Currently, I have a quartet I've been kind of getting up, and I kind of feel good about it. One of the kind of interesting things about it is that we're actually playing jazz music. And that's something I feel like is kind of a return for me. You know, we actually get to have a jazz quartet.
And what does that mean nowadays? What is a jazz quartet? What's going on?
Well, it's just like simple piano, bass, and drums, you know. I really enjoyed working with, like, different woodwind combinations and chamber groups or whatever. But now it's kind of like, I want to really do like a traditional style, not traditional jazz, but like, you know, it's almost akin to like kind of like a Branford quartet or something, you know. It's like,
and is it traditional because of I'm trying to work out why you consider it traditional. Do you consider it traditional because of the instrumentation?
Yeah, you know, it's like every saxophone player sort of either has a quartet or some kind of quintet, or, you know, it's like Coltrane had a quartet, Branford has a quartet, you know, Sonny Rollins usually is with a quartet, maybe with a trumpet player. It's like, you know, real just basic jazz configuration acts, you know, for like
That's funny because the development of the music has no particular instrumentation. How did we arrive back at particular instrumentation?
I think it's because the sounds that we're getting out of it, you know, kind of are more in the jazz tradition. Like Austin Johnson is like, he plays with, hey, what's up? All right. He plays with, Jason Marcellus, and he's doing the Vibes Quartet thing. And so he's really coming out of this. There's just this point in New Orleans where I realized I hadn't played modern jazz in like maybe a year, you know. It's like, it's kind of interesting. It's just something that's been really absent from the scene. I don't know if it's like something everybody kind of grew out of or wanted to get away from, or.
But, I mean, you know, what is. What is modern jazz?
Yeah. I guess that's a question everybody's sort of been racking their brains over, you know. But to me, it's like you have things that are, you know, I've heard so many times people say, like, it's jazz but not jazz, you know what I mean? Or, like, it's jazz but not swing, or it's jazz but, you know, and I'm kind of like, it's jazz and it's jazz, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just because you tech points, you love jazz or what? I mean, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's because I love it, and because I come from it, really, you know what I mean?
What part of you comes from that? How old are you?
I'm 27 years old.
Okay, so this is interesting. So, 27, you're from where?
I'm from Houston.
So how would you come from jazz at 27
mm-hmm.
from Houston?
Well, Houston is a big... you know, music. A lot of people have been coming out of Houston, especially in the modern, I guess, the jazz scene in New York. You know, like Robert Glasper is from Houston. Chris Dave, usually was his drummer, came from Houston. Jason Moran is from Houston, and Eric Harland, and there's like a whole host of cats from Houston. There's always kind of like this jazz tradition from Houston, you know.
Yeah.
Where everybody was sort of like encouraging each other through discouragement. But no, I mean, like, everybody is actually a pretty, pretty like, it's kind of like this nexus of growth for young players in Houston, you know what I mean?
Well, when did you become aware of jazz?
Early on, because in Houston there's jazz summer camps for young players and stuff. One of the first things I did was Texas Southern University jazz camp, and it's like every summer it's for about 5 weeks. It's actually a pretty extensive program. They do like theory and they do performances and improvisation and arranging, and you know, they have all these classes. And then you're kind of in this big band. And you always, I think in Houston, you always had players to look up to, you know what I mean? Like, for us, it was the generation before us, just like Walter Smith, Robert Glasper, Mike Moreno. I guess back then, what's his name on bass? I can't remember his name now. Typical. You know, and cats like that that came before us and said hi. At PVA, there was a famous, well, he was at PVA, at the high school I went to, High School for the Performing and Visual Arts. There was a teacher by the name of Doc Morgan, Robert Morgan, and he was always sort of like, he's the guy that really got young players in shape. He was really kind of a paternalistic jazz figure, you know, in Houston. He really, everybody respected Doc, and he had a way of really commanding young players' respect, and then, you know, from then on, have a really organized and, I guess, disciplined and invigorated ensemble. He always cares about the music. He actually retired in 1999, and whenever I see him, he's still talking about young players. He's still talking, you know, no matter where it is, he'd be like, yeah, I went to this Baton Rouge conference, and there's this cat playing piano, man. You heard this guy, you know? I'm like, no, you know.
So was he an educator, or did he have a performing career?
He had a performing career. He was a trumpet player, I think, at first, and then something happened where he was playing more piano. I don't know if it was a physical thing or if it was a personal choice. I can't remember. But he played piano, and but he was known mainly for his role as an educator, and still is. He does like the Loyola. He comes to New Orleans like once a year and does this. He helps judge this competition at Loyola. It's like I think it's somehow affiliated with maybe IHAE. I don't know if they're doing it anymore because of the dissolution of that. But you know, he's still kind of active maybe judging and young talent competitions and going around.
How do you feel about competition in art music?
Oh man, it's old as can be, you know. I used to have a much more, music is not a competition. But you know, in a way it can be. You read Mozart biographies and they had these piano playing contests in salons, so it's like this guy versus this guy, you know. It's like, boy, that sounds like New Orleans circa 2003, you know what I mean?
That was in the courts of Vienna.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's right. True.
That's, you know, a little different as a...
Yeah, but at the same time, you had these, all the Mozart, Beethoven, and all the top concert pianists of that day kind of rose to the challenge, you know what I mean? It was like these Spartan piano duels, you know? And it may not have been, you know, of course they had other pure, you know, there's a lot of other maybe purely artistic interests, but like, you know, there was still room for that, you know what I mean? And I don't think anybody, you know, Beethoven was a cocky motherfucker. You know?
Well, sure, yeah, but it wasn't competitive. I mean, in fact, it was there for competitive purposes. It certainly wasn't like a... an impresario, the way that Mozart was.
Yeah.
He had other motivations.
Of course he had certain other motivations for art. I mean, his art was his godchild, his gift from God. He called it his divine gift, his overarching passion. So it's not like one negates the other, I think, is the way I feel about competition in music. It's not like competition surplants music as art and as a medium and as the arrow of humanity, you know. I mean, it still, I don't feel like it negates the thing, but it certainly, it keeps players on their toes. It keeps people, I think it kind of leans out the art form a bit, you know what I mean? Because I think when you don't have a competitive standard, oftentimes you can have an overabundance of players and no standard just to wean and lean them out, you know what I mean? Like,
but then you have very limited parameters for where the competition can be heading. In other words, for people to be a competition, there has to be very limited parameters for
right.
the competition to go on in.
Right, well, you know, there's a time and place for it, you know what I mean? Yeah, there's a time to go back to the jazz reference, there's a time for maybe Nicholas Payton to lead his quintet at Snug Harbor and it'd be a presentation and he's not going to have people sit in. And that's purely on that level. But then there's there's times when he'll just sit in at a jam session, you know what I mean? And it's the same with any other
except
jazz musician.
A good deal of what Nicholas does now wouldn't make it in any competition.
Well,
when he's knocking around there with, you know, the racks of effects playing music that is, I mean, a good deal of his stuff now is on a level that doesn't have to do with the conception of jazz that way.
Although
it must be.
Well, yeah, by that you mean stylistically, or do you mean...
Yeah, I mean stylistically, the language of competitive jazz and competition, as I understand it, is very...
Yeah.
Is very... the exercises are specific.
Right.
There's the sonic picture that guys like Nicholas are making now or not.
I don't know if the language is terribly specific, because I feel like... It can be a thing where players are really testing each other's sincerity, you know what I mean? And so you can have players at jam sessions that don't sound like Hank Mobley, they don't sound like this and that, but it's the sincerity and the confidence of what they put forth, you know what I mean? And I think I just think that there's a lot of players who maybe look down on that and who haven't been a part of that, you know, that kind of scene, which is its own thing, you know. But I still feel like it has somewhat of a function, you know. But while Beethoven may have had his divine gift and took it with, like, a Teutonic seriousness... he still felt like I can play circles around this piano player, you know, and I'm going to do it, you know, and I'm going to show it, you know what I mean? And
I would beg to defer in as much as it appears to me that the main thrust of his career was to overthrow fascism. And I don't
really
think that, and to overthrow the constrictions of certain kinds of limitation that were going on in the court art. Court art period, so I think that's the actual subject, like
right.
his excellence relative to, because they used to hire, in other words, like he used to hire other people to play his music.
Yeah, right. And I would have, but that was frustrating for him too, and he can no longer play the piano at his own concerts, you know.
Sure.
That was incredibly frustrating for him.
Sure. Although they say he had a grand vast knowledge of the fact that he was going to fly right regardless of the deafness.
Yeah. So, I definitely don't advocate music as competition as the penultimate value of art. I mean, that's not, I would never advocate that because, you know.
It's interesting. Okay, so you'd say that your heroes in what you're calling jazz music are the people that came the generation before you. Which is interesting because those are all very living people. It's not heroes, but then you're talking about Beethoven and Mozart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
There's no one for whom that's the generation previous to that.
Oh well, there's certainly others previous to them. Yeah.
No, I mean there's no one around that for whom that's the previous. That's the in other words, that's 250 years ago. In other words,
several generations. Yeah.
Since then, but sorry, these are also equivalent. I guess these are also equivalent.
Oh, you're saying that these are equivalent to personal heroes that would be living today, like.
No, I'm just saying that they're if your heroes are jazz or the generations before they came before you, mm-hmm. that's several generations before anybody.
Right.
There's no one around there, so we're talking about, you know, a vastly different thing. Like you've had contact with the generation.
Oh yeah, we're abstracting the connection for sure, and like it takes it. You're right. Beethoven was fighting fascism, and we have no conception of his, you know, what it meant for him to first be a champion of the French Revolution and then a champion of Napoleon and then crossing out Napoleon's name in his own work, you know, scratching it out violently. You know, the inner meaning of those, yeah, that we have to gain a lot of. It is pretty, it's pretty far gone. And, you know, I think that's one thing, I guess anything that I would say about it is lacking. But I find that the interesting thing about that musical world is that it was an incredibly provincial musical environment. You know what I mean? The general classical era and even getting into the romantic era a little bit after that. You know, it's basically an aristocratic select and select cities who are sharing tastes but have own provincial flavors, you know what I mean? It's a small world, you know. And that's one of the reasons I think that, you know, of course we hear these things and they're totally, even hearing the music played, it's just like a world away. You know, and oftentimes it just doesn't speak to our current musical language or you know, it's hard to relate to. And I think that for me has put me on a serious quest to find out like how much of connection to art is purely inside of the art and how much of it is surrounded by historical understandings or some kind of, you know, is art purely in of itself a universal language, you know?
How do you express this line of questioning in your music
that we go? In the music I put together, it forces me to maybe examine. Of course, I've had to kind of go through my own examinations at the time that I live in, and that's whether or not it's conscious or subconscious. It's affected the way that I approach the music and view my own reality, so to speak. But more so, it really changes the way I listen to, for better or for worse, it changes the way that I listen to these composers or people. When I have...
You mean all musicians?
Yeah, all musicians. Like if I... For Beethoven, I had to... There was a personal connection I had to reach out to, you know what I mean? Like, the music in of itself, there's a couple of pieces that really stood out to me, but on a whole, it took a personal understanding of time and place to really, really deeply contextualize the pieces, and that's the point where a Beethoven piece would move me to tears or to real... So it, you know... For better or for worse, biographical understanding both indelibly changes the way you listen to something and either enhances or takes away from it depending on the personal view of what function that serves, you know. For me, it's enhancing, but also you take a little bit of the naked experience away, you know, so